morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning, everyone. I am Phil Vacchio.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And we are both with the Herzog Law Firm. I am an attorney. Kim Hance is our Director of Care Management. And some combination of us are here every week. Kim, I, Jane Marie, Dave Kabikian. And we're talking about estate planning, Medicaid, getting care in home, getting care in facilities, getting care anywhere, all the above. And we're here to answer your questions. If you have any, feel free to call in. The phone number is 518-476-5900. Or if you don't want to call into the show, you can always call our office and make an appointment to come see us. Free consultation at 518-465-7581. How are we doing this morning, Kim?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good.
It was actually nice getting up and not totally freezing.
It wasn't too bad this morning, yeah. Earlier in the week, there was some cold, frosty mornings.
I think we're here. We're here.
We're here, yeah. I mean,
drizzle when you guys came in, a little bit of rain?
No, not yet.
No, okay. No.
I mean, it's like, you can tell it's a little more humid in the air, I think.
Yeah.
We had a little bit of wetness last night, but nothing major.
Thanksgiving is this week already.
Can you believe it?
No, not really.
No.
It's incredible.
It's holiday swing is full in effect out of nowhere.
Yeah. You keep seeing things earlier and earlier, right?
Like, every year.
Christmas decorations have been out for in the stores for, I feel like, months.
Forever,
But I think people are decorating their houses earlier, too.
It seems that way, too.
And there's a lot of, one house that still has Halloween, and then right next door, there's Christmas. It's an interesting mix right now.
I resist it. I have, a hard start of, after Thanksgiving,
We're
I can get
same.
Into that mode.
It's got to be, know, Thanksgiving is still pumpkins and all
you
that kind of
fun enjoy
stuff.
That first. Don't forget about Thanksgiving, guys. Yeah.
You know, the only thing you really need to do, early is plan.
It's on many levels, right?
Well, I mean, from our perspective, professionally,
because I was going to say, I'm not good at planning on that side of things.
Right.
This side of things, I'm okay at it. So we were talking about that yesterday afternoon in the office, you and I, Kim, and how we always harp on planning ahead. And it seems obvious. You don't plan in crisis mode. We always play that. You plan ahead of time when things are calmer and we have our wits about us and we're not, pulling our hair out and scrambling. But it's in our world, it's getting even more important,
So much so. You were just saying that it's important to plan ahead, and we sort of logically know that.
Yeah.
But the number of people that we deal with that sit and are pulling their hair out because they haven't planned ahead.
It's incredibly easy to stick your head in the sand and, procrastinate.
It is, but, I also have to give credit. So, this is November. It's National Caregivers Month.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to all the caregivers out there because it's tough, it's tough work.
It is.
So I think in a lot of scenarios, it's easy to kind of stand back and say, oh, they haven't dealt with this. They're kind of sticking their head in the sand. But I also think we don't give enough kudos to caregivers and how stressful that is. And if they have a moment to kind of think that they're not going to spend it thinking about what I haven't done because of all the things that they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But to that point, really sitting down and having conversations and getting knowledgeable about things, because the last thing, and I think we say this all the time on the show, that you want to be making a plan is when there is an emergency of some sort.
Well, there's different levels of planning ahead, right? So,
correct.
There's really, really planning ahead. When I'm talking about, we have, for example, when we do an estate plan for a couple who's getting up there in age, not old, but, planning ahead and thinking about things like protecting assets and whatnot.
Right.
I always very strongly encourage them to bring their children with them. They might not be at the consult initially, but if they're going to proceed and their kids are going to be involved as trustees or power of attorneys or healthcare provider, I say, if possible, and they're local, or even if they're not local, we can do a phone conference or get them in on Zoom. Have them present when we go through the documents.
Yeah.
Let them ask questions. Let them understand what we're doing, why we're doing it. Because we go pretty deep into hypothetical situations.
Sure.
It's not just yeah, you guys are fine now, and this is what we're going to do. It's going to be, hey, if this happens, this is what we're going to do. If this happens, that's what we're going to do. And, you know, building a relationship with the whole family so that when stuff starts to get a little bit worse, A, they have a resource to come to that they've already built a relationship with. But B, they already have a base knowledge of some of these things. Because you're exactly right. When you're a caregiver, you're thrown into it. It's not really something that you can necessarily encounter, you know, plan to happen.
Right.
And when it does happen, all of a sudden, you're there.
Right.
And you don't know how you got there sometimes.
And there are also those scenarios, too, where you've got somebody who's been a primary caregiver, and then suddenly something goes wrong with that person. Right? So then you've potentially got two people that you need to understand the circumstances or scenarios for, and maybe they've done the planning for the person that has the obvious illness.
Yeah.
But then what happens to that well caregiver when something goes wrong with them too? So, you know, again, that's why it's important to have the whole family kind of be a part of this, is because then the kids or whoever it's going to fall to, because sometimes it's not always the kids, but then they know that they have a resource that they can kind of...
Yeah, and there's a pride component too as well sometimes, right? Spouse and spouse, you know, some of our clients are more traditional minded, and we want to use the word machismo maybe for some of the husbands here and then, and I can deal with it. I don't want to bother my kids. I don't want to burden anybody. I got this.
Yeah.
And sure, I'm sure you'll do everything you possibly can to do what you have to do, but like you were saying, you know, none of us are invincible. If something happens and there is no plan B, there's no other support system that's involved, that's really bad. It's not a good scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
This past, you know, what, this is Saturday. So Wednesday I did Thursday I did a class down at Boston High School. And it was about all the different levels of home care and sort of what you can get. And a lot of times, you know, people, when you talk about home care, they just think it's an aide coming into the home.
Right.
But we talked about, you know, doctor visits. We talked about being able to get lab and nutrition, like just all the things that you can get in a home environment. And it was really interesting because this month is also hospice and palliative care month. So we had a whole conversation about hospice and palliative care. When I asked folks what they thought about palliative care, everybody was sort of in that same boat where, you know, palliative care is terminal.
Yeah, I'm about
to
die.
It's for the end of life. Yeah. Right. It's pre-hospice.
Yep.
And really there was a whole educational piece about the palliative care being like any age, any stage, you know, dealing with chronic illness. It's not even a terminal illness. It can just be chronic illness. And it's really dealing with the symptoms around that. And one of the examples I gave was, New York Oncology Hematology, they actually have a palliative care team
and you wouldn't think
in their
that.
Practice. Yeah. Right. And everybody, you know, you could see the wheels kind of spinning. And so like that important education piece for people to really know all those resources that they can utilize. And yes, you can be on palliative care, but be seeking aggressive treatment as well. Oh, so
the general public, I mean, traditionally speaking, historically speaking, hospice palliative care was only for those terminally ill people. That's what, and in the Hollywood version of it, that's what people see.
Right.
They don't realize that it's much, much more.
Sure.
And it's in the community Medicaid world, or community care, not even Medicaid, just care in the community world.
Right.
It's such a broad scope of different options, and, you know, it gives us an opportunity to kind of get creative with families to help them versus, you know, general, just I'm in a nursing home. I'm there. That's all I need.
Right.
That's easy in a sense of it's set, right? You're in one place, everything, all your needs are met. You're not thinking about other stuff. There's no outside expenses usually, as everything's in house. If I'm not in a nursing home and I'm in, whether it's independent living in my own home, even different levels of assisted living, you have to get a lot more creative because there's a lot more things you still have to manage. And there's a lot more options than people realize. I think.
Right. Right. 100%.
And sometimes, you know, the Medicaid portion of it that we're involved in oftentimes, we were talking about starting earlier, even more so than ever, it's getting, the Medicaid application itself is still, for the most part, the same.
Right.
Although there's rumblings, if you haven't talked about this in a long time.
I know.
Boy who cried wolf over here, but there's rumblings again of that 2.5-year look back potentially going into place in 2026, and that wouldn't be surprising with all the budget cuts to, you know,
with everything that's
federal
changing
and state funding and whatnot.
Yeah.
So nothing has been formal, and we'll see. And I don't want to harp on it again. And people say, oh, this guy is talking about this again. Here we go.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But
We do need to kind of keep it sort of in the
top of mind.
You go in the back, but I'm like, it needs to stay mid.
Caught off guard if and when it does go into effect.
Right.
But even in addition to that, with all the cuts to funding and whatnot and changing of rules to a degree, it's getting harder to get aids in place. It's getting harder to get the hours that we need approved. And, it's to do it yourself is really difficult. I got a comment recently, somewhat recently, 4 months ago, right? I had a consultation with an individual about community Medicaid for his mother. Mm. And we talked about it and I went through the process and how it works and the application and whatnot. And he goes, end of the conversation, he goes, yeah, no offense, but it sounds like it's just paperwork. I got it. Mm. I was like, okay. I'm not going to push you here. You, go ahead. That was 4 months ago.
Mm.
He called back this week. He didn't got it, right? So he was having issues with the application, couldn't get it to go through. And then, he brought up what we talk about quite often. What's that pooled income trust thing again? How do I set that up? And I said, well, when you submitted paperwork, did you submit certain paperwork for what we call a disability review, which is really important? I don't know what you're talking about, right?
Right.
And he's like, at this point, just take it over. Now we're 4 months behind.
Yeah.
And while some of it is just paperwork, it's not very intuitive, unfortunately. They don't make the process very easy for the general public to manage themselves.
Right. Well, and there's no manual. And it's funny because, we've talked about this internally, about having sort of a, like a grid, right, that tells you how things operate.
Mm-hmm.
And even with all of the folks that we do, because it's such an individual plan, I have a conversation with every single person that we do a Medicaid application for, right? To really understand what their circumstances are and their scenario and really help them sort of identify what program makes the most sense. I mean, Medicaid's pretty straightforward. Like you said,
yeah.
It's an application. There are nuances to that application that have to be done, particularly if they're going to have a spend down, if those kinds of things. But when it comes to the care piece or the services piece, there are so many different options. And there's one like mainstream where everybody kind of gets pushed towards. But then there's all of these other kinds of things that can be utilized. And then there are services that we use as a bridge, too.
Yeah.
Like when we have people that come in to do Medicaid apps, we're saying it's going to be several months, depending on the program, before anything gets in place. But in the meanwhile, here are some things that can provide some stopgap measures,
yes,
right? Here's
especially
some
if they
funding,
are
here's some
coming to us
programs.
In that crisis mode, right?
Correct. Right.
What do you mean months? I need care now,
right.
And that's where we're doing the stopgap type of thing. And
yep.
Here's some programs available in the meantime.
Yeah, like right now, I have somebody who's doing sort of a short term stay in an assisted living because the home care plan was just going to be too complicated.
Yeah.
So we were like, okay, well let's do a step down, from rehab into the assisted living. And it is also giving them a good trial run to see how they can be in a more independent setting, right? Let's kind of test the waters and really see, kind of gauge what their needs actually are. And that assisted living environment will give them that opportunity to do that.
And we've done that before with clients, which is, I think when people think of assisted living, it's more permanent in their minds.
Sure.
Like, if I'm going through assisted living, that's a different stage of life. I'm there.
Right.
And they don't really think about it as a temporary type of scenario.
As a good kind of safety net, kind of transitional.
Yeah.
Because they can still get therapy and then assisted living. They can still, it really is a more independent setting, but we can bring those services into assisted living just like we would if they were at home. So it really gives us a good trial run to be able to see how are they going to be able to function.
That's right.
When they're a little bit more independent.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about some options that you have in the community.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Welcome back. I'm Phil Vacchio.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
Before the break, Kim and I were talking about, options in the community for care and how Medicaid applications and finding that care is not so easy. It's hard to navigate on your own. Right before the break, Kim, you were bringing up an idea that I don't think many people actually think of is using something like assisted living as a temporary scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying most people think of it more permanent, like I'm moving on from living in a house or in my apartment to assisted living, and once I'm there, I'm there, which
right.
is a common scenario.
And yeah.
That's probably how it's commonly used, but to use it as an intermediary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of rehab and I'm not quite ready to come home, or I don't have the care
right.
in my home set up yet, it could be used
as a perfect transition.
As a good transition, yeah. And again, I think that's one of the fun parts of our job, and that's something that you're great at and you do a lot for us, is getting creative in that realm. It's not just the paperwork. It's not just the legal side. I think the Medicaid application itself, I would say, is maybe 40% of the process.
Yeah.
Right? When you get the approval, it's not like magic happens and all of a sudden there's aides in the house, is everything running smoothly. That's like
no.
the beginning of it, honestly.
Well, and that's what I always say to people. I'm like, okay, now here's the really fun,
right,
you know,
the fun,
like,
begins.
The fun thing, right.
And it's tough for us sometimes because you have to set expectations for certain, because people can get very, you know, it's a high stress situation.
Yeah.
A lot of times people aren't coming to us early enough, in our opinion, because they're in that crisis mode. And they want answers. They want immediate resolution now.
Yeah.
And it's not that easy to get that.
Well, and I mean, you know, all the conversations that I have with people too are like, this is so complicated.
Yeah.
Like there's like, my head is spinning. You know, I was having a conversation with a family member last night, and, you know, she has started the process that, you know, they've gone through the initial assessment process. And that's one of the biggest things that's changing right now and that we're really working on coaching our families with, is because, you know, the process for qualifying medically has changed. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's, we have to break it down for people. There's the financial qualification, which is the Medicaid application, but then there's the medical qualification and trying to decide, you know, there's particular assessments that have to be done. And are we going to do this assessment as a blanket for all the programs? Or do we know that somebody that might have moderate dementia where they can't really be left alone, but physically they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. They can do all the things physically. You know, they may not qualify medically under the traditional way of doing an assessment where people pushed into, right?
We'll talk about that for a second. So say putting the other programs to the side, and we often get creative, but let's say we have to go the traditional Medicaid route. Like there's no, it's mostly physical in nature. There's no cognitive things. We get the Medicaid application itself to go through, the person's approved.
Right.
Right. What are they doing after that? Like this assessment you're talking about, walk me through that a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, they'll get a letter saying that now it's time to call the independent assessor and schedule a time. And there's a couple of ways to do it. So it's two assessments, basically. The first one is about 2.5 to 3 hours. It goes through all things. The important thing for people to understand is that assessment, when they're meeting with you, they're only asking you questions about the last 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
They're not asking about months of need. And I think that can construe, because what happens, people don't take a shower. You know, particularly as we get older, there may not be a need to take a shower, but twice a week. So if you haven't had a shower in the last 3 days and you're answering the question based on the last 3 days, you know, so there's a lot of coaching that goes in when we're meeting with somebody prior to that point to say, this is what you can expect. These are going to be some of the things that they're talking about. And this is really how we have to kind of angle it. And we're certainly not telling people to fib, right?
Yeah. Well, coaching is the key word, and it's exactly right. If they go into it, you know, first of all, if the person who needs the care is the one answering the questions themselves, oftentimes they're going to be very prideful, Right? This is it is embarrassing stuff, or they're in complete denial. Right.
Or they don't actually understand how much that caregiver is doing for them.
True.
Because that's the other thing that I say to families is like, you really have to look at this assessment as the person's worst day.
Yeah.
And what would happen if there was no one here to help, right? And that can just be a son or daughter or a niece or nephew or a grandchild coming in and just helping with a few things. But sometimes that team of people, they feel like they're not doing a whole lot. But together, the collective are doing a whole lot for that individual,
yeah, you know,
because they're
the
kind
picture,
of like dividing and conquering. And so I, you know, we have to take a step back and really say, like, let's walk through your daily schedule for the last 2 weeks. And let's kind of talk about and look about all the things that are happening. And then there's like that sudden like aha moment of like, oh my gosh, there's a lot that's going on, where if you were just kind of looking at the last few days, yeah, no, I did that. I was able, you know. But there's also that prideful effect too,
yeah,
where a lot of times, or maybe the person doesn't have the realization of all of the assistance that they do need. So it's really important to have somebody that can say, well, no, mom, if you'll remember, you know, these are some of the things that I do when you get in and out of the shower, or when, you know, you're getting in, up and ready for the day. And, you know, these are some of the things that we have to help you with.
Yeah. And there's two potentially negative scenarios that can come out of that assessment. One is that they say you don't need care at all, right? You don't meet the baseline threshold.
Right.
You don't need assistance with activities of daily life. And then we can't access any of the benefits, right? And then all these things we can appeal, but that's one scenario. The other scenario is we get approved, but it's far, far less hours than the person actually needs or than we anticipated, and and the family's really upset. So, you know, the first part of it, like you're talking about, is that coaching, going into that assessment fully informed, knowing the phraseology to use, knowing how to approach it, what angle to approach it from. But then, if that doesn't go right, we also have resources where we can help to appeal, you know, either the denial or the low average. We can appeal it. So on both angles, people have to be informed that we're getting more of those than we used to, put it that way.
Well, and so it's also setting the expectation with the families, you know, particularly when you're in a more like needy crisis mode, that in order to appeal something, you actually have to enroll in and accept what they're willing to give you at that moment, because you can't even appeal until you're enrolled in a program.
Which is not totally logical. Wouldn't think of that. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, a lot of times it's really setting the expectations for folks to let them know that yes, we have tools in our toolbox. However, we can't really pull that toolbox out until we've sort of initiated that undesirable outcome in a lot of the scenarios. And then so then we kind of are looking back, all right, what other resources can we pull in to kind of backfill?
Yeah.
To help support.
Well, because now we have more delays, right?
Right.
More things we have to go through to get what we want.
And that's hard. I mean, and so again, when we're meeting with people, it's not trying to set the fire drill button, but it is kind of like we need to understand sort of everything that an individual needs.
Yeah.
Who's there to help provide some support, and also to let these people, you know, to let everybody know this is not something that happens overnight. I mean, even if we're not applying for Medicaid.
Yeah.
Like all.
It's
like,
not always Medicaid. Right.
We do a lot of Medicaid, but I also help families a lot that aren't using Medicaid or don't want to use Medicaid. Even from, you can have all the money in the world. Finding the right resources sometimes is really hard. Particularly depending on where you live,
I was gonna say, yeah, those
how
factors,
much you need,
yep.
You know, what kind of care you need. Like right now I have an individual who has a traumatic brain injury from coding during surgery. So traumatic brain injury, has a tracheostomy, a feeding tube, catheter. Like he is so medically complex, anybody would think. Well, A, everybody would think he would need to be in a nursing home. He doesn't.
Sure.
We can do this at home.
Sure.
But, you know, we have to carve out all of those tasks, right? Like, what are the ones that are we considered skilled tasks where somebody at a higher level needs a nurse doesn't have to be there 24/7, but, you know, there are times during the
for
day that we
things.
Need somebody that has a high knowledge. But there's also, we can teach people how to do those things as well.
Yep.
So it may not necessarily require a nurse to do it, somebody who can be taught how to do trach care, how to do tube feedings, that kind of thing. That's sort of that consumer directed model, right? Like where you're teaching people.
When you're saying these things right now, Kim, like if I not being in the business, if I wasn't in the business, I would say that all sounds great, but where would I even start? And what's good is, you know, we have so many resources we can connect to, like we're talking about training. You know, I know you have some connections that we can refer to that will do those trainings with the individuals and get them capable of doing these things.
Right.
Because even though like all these options are available and you might know about them, accessing them is so difficult. It's a complicated system.
Yeah.
And what I'll add on top of that too, so when we do, and going back into the Medicaid world, right? So, the fact that it being, so the comment I had from that client, it's just paperwork. Sometimes there's things we have to do to make the person Medicaid eligible in terms of moving assets around and whatnot. And there's different rules for different kinds of Medicaid. And we don't want to do something now with the community Medicaid to get us eligible that would negatively affect our options in the future, particularly if, you know, what I call the worst case scenario happens from medical need, that you need to get into skilled nursing care. Mm-hmm. That happens in the future. Because that, you know, the one of the biggest differences is the whole 5-year look back that's related to that.
Right.
So I had a call from a financial advisor I know. This was last night, actually, and he had some questions. I guess a client of his saw another attorney somewhere in a more rural area. I don't even know. I couldn't remember the name of it. In New York. And they were qualifying for community Medicaid. And, you know, the attorney told him to gift $19,000 per person to a bunch of different people, right? And that, but we're getting confused. I won't go into too deep, but there's IRS rules where I can gift up to that amount.
Yeah, there's the tax law, gift, right?
And on its face, that plan will get the person eligible for community Medicaid.
Right.
It'll get the money. There's no look back still right now for community Medicaid. So sure, they give away all this money to all these different people and the person's eligible now.
Yep.
Now what happens if in 2 years that person has to go into a skilled nursing home and those people don't have that money to give back? We are in a really difficult situation because there's going to be, you know, a huge penalty period where Medicaid is going to say, hey, 2 years ago, you gave away all this money to hold these people. Those are what we call unqualified, uncompensated transfers. We're not going to pay for a blank amount of months based on the amount that was given away. So, you know, we have to keep those things in mind too, that, hey, this is the plan now, but we also have to look at what could potentially happen in the future.
Sure.
And the plan now has to take that into account.
Right.
Right. And that's really important because if they follow that one attorney's advice, that way it could be a really bad situation.
Well, and you only know what you know. Right. Yeah. And this is what, you know, when we always sit down with families, we're like, do you have a financial planner? Do you have, you know, who's on your team?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to meet with we want the whole team to come together because we want to look at the big picture. Right. And we always say we start at the 50,000 foot view and we kind of start working our way down because we want to make sure that every bit of advice that we give is sort of covering all of those scenarios that could happen.
Yeah.
And no plan is ever 100% foolproof, but we're always kind of trying to look ahead to say like, okay, well, if that happens, then we can put in, you know, plan triple D because we've explored what the options would be, right?
Yeah, we always go through that, right? You go, plan A is the best case scenario. If this works, fabulous. If that doesn't work, we have plan B, we have plan C. You know, each successive plans may be a little less beneficial than the one before it, but there always is that next level plan. And it's better than doing nothing, put it that way.
Right.
And it's, you know, all this stuff is complicated. I love what we do, Kim. We get to help people. Yeah.
The day, it's always, we leave kind of like, that was really cool.
Exactly, you know? Right.
Hope everybody has a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.